Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Politically Speaking. Today, if you are, if it's your first time, welcome to the show. Also, shout out to our repeat viewers. I feel like we got like a strong, five solid viewers every time.
Yes.
And you know,
we're so grateful.
Exactly. Granted, you know, three of them are probably in the room right now. You know, but if you care the one.
Right.
You know, actually, I've never been really good at math. So nonetheless, thank you, everybody, tuning in. We are here. We are live. So with that being said, we have a lot to talk about. We do have a special guest. Let's go ahead and welcome the one and only Ryan Stevens to the show. Welcome to episode 13.
Thank you. Hi. Lucky 13. I feel honored to be a part of your podcast today.
Yes.
Spooky season.
Welcome
yes,
to the show.
Yes, it is spooky season.
It's a little over, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
About me, I live up in Rock Hill, so in South Carolina, close to Charlotte, and I have been working in Democratic politics for a number of years. I serve on the county board, Democratic Party board. I have helped numerous candidates run and get elected, just helped to yesterday get elected to Rock Hill City Council. I had some losses that we came in with like 30 votes, but overall, I have been doing this for a while. I was a delegate to the DNC last August.
We're jealous. We're so jealous.
And it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's about me. I've been in this environment for a long time, and it's been a lot of fun as well.
Welcome.
So I'm going to sound really dumb, but what county is Rock Hill in? This is such a dumb question, but...
It's York County. Okay. So it's the county that welcomes everyone into South Carolina from Charlotte.
All right.
Lovely. I don't clearly I don't know South Carolina geography super well, but anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it takes time.
Well, welcome to the show. I'm glad to have you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. So let's go ahead and hop right into it. We are going, if you were like me, you were probably either you're watching the election either last night or just waking up to results. So let's go ahead and kick it off to Kirsten while we go ahead and open up the show. Let's talk about the election day.
Yeah. So what a night it was for Democratic politics. We're recording this the night after election day. Still just as excited as I was when I woke up this morning and saw the results for Democrats. It's been a while since we've had this feeling after election day. And I, for one, am super excited and hopeful for things going forward. So one thing that we saw this particular election was a lot of the Democrats that were running for office across the country decided to run on a key issue with voters, which is affordability. And it did pay off for them. Affordability is an issue I've been saying for a long time. Really, our candidates need to talk more about. And we saw that. So Democrats won in a massive way yesterday. Abigail Spanberger, a moderate Democrat, became the first female governor of Virginia. Mickey Sherrill was elected governor of New Jersey, another strong female. And in California, Proposition 50 was passed, giving the state power to redraw congressional districts to counteract Texas's gerrymandering. And then in New York City, Zohran Mamdani, it's a mouthful. was elected mayor, becoming the first Muslim mayor of New York City. In Georgia, we picked up a pair of statewide elections. I'm totally blanking on what those two seats were. I know they were something with utilities.
Yeah.
Like Public Utilities Commission or something to that effect. But anyway, Democrats haven't won a non-federal race in Georgia in two decades. So that was pretty amazing. So then if we kind of focus in a little bit more on Virginia, we saw Spanberger win with 57.2% of the vote. We also saw Ghazala Hazmi elected lieutenant governor, becoming the first Muslim woman elected to statewide office in the U.S. This next one is near and dear to my heart. All eight Emerge alumni running in Virginia's red to blue districts won their races. So yay, Emerge alumni.
Good job.
Yeah. And Democrat Jay Jones became attorney general.
And seating an incumbent.
Yes. Amid a texting controversy with some controversial texts from his past. Okay. And he still won. So that's awesome. And then in the Virginia House of Delegates, Democrats now have more than 60 seats in that 100-seat body, so they've expanded their majority there. And many people in Virginia have been affected by Trump's massive dismantling of federal government agencies, and you saw their dissatisfaction with their votes. In New York City, more than 2 million voters turned out to vote, which is the first time a mayoral election crossed that threshold since 1969. Donnie collected over 1.03 million votes, which is larger than the population of five states.
Wow.
So then, you know, if we go more local to South Carolina, we had some big wins as well. I'll start with Greenville, of course. We had two city council seats up for grabs. Lillian Brock Fleming was an incumbent Democrat, and she won with her seat with 62.0% of the vote. Yay, Lillian. And then Tina Belge, who was on our podcast recently.
That's exciting.
Love her. She won her race with 59.39% of the vote.
That's amazing.
So we're really excited. She was up against a developer of luxury apartments and condominiums. Mm-hmm. And that is the last kind of person we need on city council here. So we're super excited. And then looking at, it looks like Columbia didn't have as great a night. Daniel Rickenman was elected mayor, and that's technically a nonpartisan seat, but we know which way Daniel Rickenman leans, which is more Republican, or not more Republican, is Republican. And then this is something that I wasn't really sure about, and one of you two may know, may give me more clarity here. So I was looking at our friend Adity Bustle's election. She was running for re-election for Columbia City Council.
Mm-hmm.
And with that race, nobody got over 50% of the vote. Does that matter in that seat? Do you
it
guys
does.
Know?
They're in a runoff. I think it's November something. I think it's a 20.
Yeah, coming up this month.
Yeah, so it's her and
Sam Johnson.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
So Adity got 43.2% of the vote, and Sam Johnson got 47.39%.
And Sam Johnson used to work for the former mayor, who has his endorsement.
Yeah.
Steve Benjamin.
I thought Sam Johnson's name sounded very familiar. Yeah. So I'm hoping for the best for Adity there, one of our friends, and she's been doing great things in Columbia. So we'll be watching the runoff for that for sure. And then a seat that we were watching because a friend of ours, Charleston City Council District 12, where our friend Leslie Scarden was running, she won with 58.8% of the vote. Yay, Leslie. Very excited for her. And then I said, I'm sure there are other important South Carolina races from yesterday. Are there any that you guys want to comment on or share?
Well, in Charleston, Aaron Polkey won against a 30-year incumbent. I forget what district. I don't know the numbers or anything like that, but I forget. But I know,
that was the one.
So was that, there was a Democrat one?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like they're nonpartisan, but the individual that was sitting on city council has been there for a long time. And so it's a huge upset with the incumbency. He was there for like 30-something years. And so that's a huge win for Aaron and his team. And Aaron is really great. He's a lawyer with the Palmetto Project, I believe it is.
Great.
And so, it's going to be exciting. And right here in Rock Hill, we picked up two city council seats. We had an all-male city council for the past 4 years. And so the two women, Sarah Vining, she won with 58.3% of the vote. And then Nikita Jackson, she won with 52% of the vote. And then Tiga Kay, which is predominantly a very huge Republican stronghold here in York County on the lake of Lake Wylie, we picked up a seat there with a individual who upholds the Democratic Party values, as I say, because they're nonpartisan and we don't want to get anyone too in trouble, I guess.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I always forget because Greenville is partisan for our city council.
You're one, I think one of, in Aiken is partisan.
Yeah, so I'm so focused on Greenville that I forget that it's not that way other places, and I just start labeling everybody, and they're probably not thrilled.
Because
have to catch myself.
It's people. I think hopefully it will start going away. Seeing how the Republican Party is a crazy, crazy party to be a part of.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, you know, we're talking about South Carolina, but then also nationally. So a lot of the commentary has been on this is a rebuke against Trump and his policies. And what are y'all's thoughts about these wins we've seen across the country and like what that means for Democrats? Does it mean anything for Democrats?
I think we could take it as a rebuke to Trump. But I was laughing at some of the exit polling that CNN did for Jay Jones's race specifically. He won 9% of voters that still thought his texting was inappropriate and he should not hold office.
Oh, wow.
But I was like, that's crazy. But it just shows that people are so visceral and how they view Republicans. And I think it's a momentum shift forward of we want common sense. I loved how a different shade of blue won across America that, you know, you had a Democratic socialist in New York City that would probably never win in South Carolina. But you had, you know, individuals that were more moderate, like Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, coming the first woman in 2025 to be governor. And there were seats that part of the wins that they had, the Democrats in Virginia, they flipped seats in that have not been that have been Republican for like decades. And in Charlotte, just to the north of me, the Democrats up there, they flipped a city council seat that was held by Republicans for over 20 years, and they won by 13 percentage points.
Wow.
So there is something palpable happening on the ground. People are getting more excited. I'm getting more excited because out of the two individuals, I feel like that I was assisting, I was shocked more than the other one over the other. And I think people, they're so desperate for change in our, than what we have been happening the past 11 months since January. And so I think that people are ready to start pushing back as much as we can.
I think that's an interesting thing you say about change, because like one of my childhood best friends lives in New York City. I texted him this morning and was like just joking with him. I was like, so you voted for Cuomo last night? And he was like, no, absolutely not. But then he kind of went into how, you know, a lot of the changes that Mamdani wants to do, he won't be able to do. Like, they're kind of radical and he won't be able to do them. And he was like, but some change is better than no change. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. You know, we can't get fixed on all of his promises because they're just realistically not going to happen. But if he can bring some kind of change, people are looking for it.
Right, right.
Go ahead,
what do you think, Erica?
Okay. I also want to give a shout out to Mary Sheffield. Yeah, I don't know if we had acknowledged her yet as when you were going down all the lists of wins yesterday, but I do want to shout her out because out of Detroit's 324 year history, there has been like 75 mayors, and she is not only the first female mayor of Detroit, she's the first Black female of Detroit. So I do obviously
of Detroit.
She is the first woman of Detroit. Yeah. She made history last night.
How did I miss that? That's my hometown.
That's why I want to make sure I shout that out because
that's great.
Big deal. So shout out to, you know, Mary Sheffield right now.
That is phenomenal. Oh, I'm so excited. You know, I love women leaders.
Yeah, exactly.
And Detroit needs that. Oh my, yay.
Yeah.
Great news. I've been so focused on like all these other things.
Yes, but I
she's think still on me and I'm a hometown.
Okay, so this is I think this is a shift for good. I think this is when you think that everyone is like giving up, that they've like beaten us down, that they've like the air in the balloon has gone out. It's like this is that little moment of like, okay, all right, are y'all paying attention? Like, no, change is on the horizon, and we need to. It's all about momentum. It's all about timing, and it's all about, you know, just showing people that reminder, like, if y'all don't get involved, this little, like, he hasn't even barely been 6 months since he's been in office. Like, y'all better go ahead and get involved now. Start creating that game plan that's, like, the handbook. set and play. Like, let's go ahead and start paying attention. Yeah. Let's start figuring out and, like, not only listening, but learning. This is what the Republicans, and not just Republicans, just ignorant people in general. I don't want to label them Republican, just people in general have that little thought process of, like, tit for tat. And it's like, no, we all need to be sitting at the same table because these problems affect everybody. Mm-hmm. So I definitely feel like this is a great momentum to at least, like, of what's in store and what's in head. And I feel like we got to show them better than you can tell them. Like, no, we come to the polls. Like, we get involved now. Mm-hmm. Like, you sick and tired of this, like, terrible person. My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just terrible.
Horrible.
And just speaking of just terrible
situations. And my hope is, like, when you're...
Go ahead, Kirsten.
No. I was just going to say, you know, with this momentum and people needing to be paying attention, we've still got the 2026 midterms coming up. So we just need to hold this momentum and keep it going and hopefully learn some lessons from this, you know, and things that worked and didn't. And one thing I thought was interesting, you know, and Ryan touched on this with, we saw different kinds of Democrats win in different places. And I mean, that just shows you that not all Democrats are the same and they shouldn't be the same. A Democrat running in South Carolina is going to look very different from a Democrat running in New York City. Mm-hmm. It's okay. And that's important. Uh-huh. So I love that we saw both ends, like Democratic Socialist and a moderate. You know, we need everybody.
Right. Yeah, we truly do. And I think that's, I'm getting ready to speak to a bunch of college Democrats here in a couple of weeks. And one of the leaders is like, what do we need to do? And I was just like, we need to, like, especially the younger generations, they want things to happen so fast and so differently. And I was like, I was there. And I call myself like a pragmatic progressive, where I look at the realistic landscape of it, everything. And this election just shows that, where you can have an individual that can be a little more center than the new mayor elect of New York City, and we're going to be fine. Does it mean, and if he wants to run for president, come down to South Carolina, we'll host events with you down here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think people, especially younger individuals, tend to be chronically online. And so I'm like, go talk to people. And I think once we talk to our neighbors, we have a shared value system in America that I think the majority of people, we all recognize. And I think that the 30, 40% of Trump supporters, they're just loud and they're obnoxious and they know how to be loud. And so I think people tend to forget that. And we just have to run people that can win in the districts that they are going to run in and that are known within the community. Because I'm already thinking about 2026 and trying to find people to run. Even now, because the next election starts literally today. And so I always tell people, I was like, what is the issue in the district in which you want to represent? And how are you going to make a difference in someone's life? And who in the community can back you up? Who in the community can speak on your behalf, on your character? And I think people want to, you know, reach for the stars and run for Congress when we have wonderful seats here in South Carolina that we can run and win in. And we just get so, like, school board is a huge one that a close friend of mine is on school board here in Rock Hill. And people don't understand how much the budget that they have, the school bonds. And so these things affect you, even if you're not, if you don't have children in the community, in public schools or children at all, but it's still your tax dollars go somewhere.
I agree. I always say local election matters. Every time I ask someone, are they registered to vote? I'm always following up with, like, do you vote, like, locally, or do you wait for the president to be on the ticket? Like, how, you know, I've always tried to deep dive into that to remind them that there are multiple elections, not just, you know, what the common one that everyone comes out to. Like, no, local matters. You see that bump in the road? I know you're tired of having to always buy new tires on that car. Tell the city council people, you know, fix that. Like, you know, all this stuff matter.
Well, it's like when I got in my car wreck the other day and had to wait 2 hours for the police to show up. And I'm texting Emily and Erica, and I'm like, my girl Tina, Tina Belgi, I'm like, she would not stand for this. And so I told the guy that hit me, because he was getting irritated waiting for the police, and I said, you know, Tina Belge, and I knew this guy lived in Greenville City. And I was like, you know, Tina Belge's running, you know, she cares about police wait times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like every opportunity, and like Emily said, ABC, right. Always be campaigning. And, you know, take it every, that's why these local elections matter, because you could get hit and have to wait 2 hours for a police officer to show
up.
That's
crazy.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, you know, I pay my taxes and I'm like, my tax dollars should be not waiting for 2 hours. But
right.
It's a mess.
That is wild. And that's where I think people don't understand that the system, the civics of our government systems. And I think we're starting to realize now with the current president in office how important these local elections are and how important it is that people show up at the meetings and get elected. But I was thinking also, Jay Jones, the attorney general elect of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, he outran Kamala Harris's numbers. And even in the two seats that Georgia, the Democrats in for Georgia, they, you know, I think part of their reason was in Georgia, they have a huge conglomerate that wants to merge for utilities. And so people were fed up with that. But you look at those numbers and some of those counties and some of those districts, they're like the shift, the amount of people that came out to vote for these off-year elections, as we typically call them in political world, was very high. I was still shocked that over 1,000 people in Rock Hill for one ward came out to vote when our mayoral election was not contested. We had two people run and one guy just dropped out. And so people are coming out in these elections and they're not, the top of the ticket wasn't contested here in the city of Rock Hill. And so I think overall people want to still have the control and the autonomy to speak up and have that in America, because we have a man that needs labels to know which room he is in now. If you didn't see the Oval Office, it has a nice bold label outside of it that says the Oval Office. And so, and yesterday, I was watching Steve Kornacki. He said that the majority of people now blame Republicans for the shutdown, and they are blaming Republicans for high healthcare costs. And so I think that is really eye-opening for a lot of people when their benefits are being, like SNAP benefits, getting cut. And I told candidates too, and people that are interested in running, especially at the state level, I'm like, find out what the programs are called in South Carolina, so people know, like, what some people truly, they may be on government assistance, but don't believe they're on government assistance, or they don't believe they're on Medicare. So I think the election yesterday was really exciting to see the returns, to see the amount of people that are coming out to vote. So, like Erica was saying, we got to keep this momentum going, get people engaged in the next round of process, and have, you know, a spirited primary. Then after 2026, we get on the starting of the election process for president again. So, and people always ask, I was, you know, thinking this too, is like, who's the leader of the Democratic Party currently? Yeah. And there's just so many great people that represent Democratic values across the board. With the mayor, Zoran, and now Abigail Spanberger, we have the former Vice President Kamala Harris. And so I'm just like, we have such a wide variety of people that are represented within the party that share, you know, more progressive values or more of a moderate, approach to things. And so, and not any of them is wrong. We just need to fight in this together to show people that what the Democratic Party stands for. And I think some people forget what that is.
You were touching points on our next segment earlier about when you were talking about the SNAP crisis going on. And I feel like the whole like situation right now that we know of, they're basically trying to cancel SNAPs because of just lack of funding or lack of trying to reallocate the funding and things like that. And so there was like discussions around like that, SNAP can continue, but you're only going to get like half the support for that. It's like, this was like the timing of this is like starting in November. This is like all the holiday season. Ain't nobody got time to be like getting stressed out even more about food related, you know what I'm saying? So I just feel like the crisis is just the layers upon the layers about how this is all, again, just, I always tell people, like, you know, elections have consequences. Like, I don't want to hear about you. You don't like the way things are, but you ain't even vote. I don't want to hear about, you know, that anything and any opinions. You're not even registered to vote. Like, it's like, get out of my ear. Talking about the way things are when you didn't go over there and even like contribute to, you know, changing the way things are.
Push
and
a button. Like that.
Yeah. So, all right. So, hold on. Let me make sure my five listeners are still here. I love y'all. You know, don't go anywhere.
We need you.
We need you. Sit down. I joke, a kid. But nonetheless, this is the way that things are. And it's like, come on, y'all. Like, this whole situation, I feel like the Republicans control so much. That's what people need to just be reminded about. Yeah, it's like if you they're getting involved, but they're getting involved in all the ways that it's like affecting all of us. It is like they could definitely, you know, make these changes. They have the body. They have the hands. They have all of that. So it's like, no, it's like some things can be a blame game. But then it's like other things are just like to just be nonpartisan. This should be like an issue for everybody. Like, and then the fact that these, you know, people that y'all have elected, because y'all need to take accountability, because I did not vote for these people. But some of y'all need to realize that even these people are still getting paid while you are on your government shutdown. Hello, somebody. Yeah. I don't know who needs to hear this, but y'all listen.
Right.
Hello. They are still collecting their coins. So anywho, but on to back.
And they're not even working. They're not even working right now.
Hello, people. Pay attention.
They're on recess or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
It's like,
and that's a crazy thing is they haven't really worked at all this year in Congress. I saw an infographic of how many days they've worked, and it was just like 3 weeks or a month. I was like, wow, I want that job.
Right. I was just going to say, I need to figure that out.
Yeah. He wants to give y'all half of the SNAP benefits. And SNAP is, again, a resource, a tool to help.
Which is against the court order.
Like it's exactly, but it's like, what is the definition even half? Like, I feel like he's trying, the government wants to give you like a loaf of bread, but they keep all the middle pieces and you get like the end pieces. There you go. Like, go sit down. So just take this down. You know, go have a seat. It's like, no, no. And this is, again, like this is people who have y'all, who told y'all before they even got into this position what they was going to do if they did get into this position. Let's just make sure I throw that out there also. So it's like, exactly. So it's like, we cannot no longer be like, woe is me. No, woe is all of us and y'all specifically. Y'all put these people in these positions to control us and to have these powers. And even now, they are even bothering the people who need SNAP. Like, leave these people alone. You think, like, come on, some of these people just struggling and stuff like that. And now they're even trying to have a provision on, like, how much could even these people get. And it's like, what is, they're even trying to change the requirement. And I feel like, yeah, we all know that there are people that probably take advantage of the system, but there are really people who genuinely need the assistance. And the fact that now you're even trying to have power over what meets the criteria, man. And speaking of, I make good money, and even I punch the air every time I have to go check out. I'm like, what is this? What did I purchase? Like, it was only five idols. Take it back, my guy. So that's why I'm like, I'm complaining. It's second guessing. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, this is just the audacity of these people even want to even have conversations about even making adjustments on that. It's like, my gosh, these people are struggling. They need help. We should be taken away. We need to be giving more to, adding to. Like, this is crazy. That's my soapbox for that segment.
It's the whole, and it's frustrating because you think of the kids that are not being fed or the families that cannot afford groceries, and especially coming up on the holiday season, kids want to go buy Christmas presents, and it's really cruel and disgusting that people voted for this when it was in Project 2025. And the Democrats' attorney generals for a number of states got together and sued the Trump administration because there is that provision where for quote unquote rainy day funds for the SNAP program to be funded. And that's where Trump is saying, we're just going to partially fund it. When the court order said you had to do the full thing. And so you know, who's going to keep this man accountable when kids are starving, when healthcare costs are going through the roof, where the number one cause of bankruptcy in America is healthcare. And that's now disgusting. They're being added back onto the credit reports. But, you know, and it's sad because a lot of people are on these benefits. I think it was like 20,000 individuals or 20,000 people just in York County alone.
Oh, wow.
That are not going to have SNAP benefits. Actually, I think that was families. I can't remember. I should probably look it up.
Well, it's still a big number.
It affects everybody. And it's really just crazy. And now the TSA or the transportation, they're going to cut down on how many airplanes are going to be flying next week. And so this is how crazy is this government going to continue? And for me, you know, I'm thankful. I was laid off by my full-time job over the summer, but I've been thankful for the government assistance of actually, it was a quote unquote full package for my company, but I still think it's important that people have that safety net if they're getting, you know, Amazon cutting $30,000 or 40,000 jobs just a couple weeks ago. And so it's just wild.
And that's crazy because I'm literally opening an Amazon package right now.
Yeah.
So I don't understand.
When I think of someone was asked at the election party last night that I was at last, someone was like, you can be stressed out by the daily stuff we see from Trump, or you can get involved locally and kind of fight against it at the local level. And that's what they decided to do with these city council races. And now they're going to be like, okay, what is the next race? Okay, your state house and your state senate, where Mississippi just, the Democrats there broke up the supermajority that the Republicans have held for a number of years. And I'm like, oh, that's inspiration for us here in South Carolina.
Seriously?
That has supermajority status in the state house. And so I was making calls today about people running for office next year. And so because you can get your blood pressure crazy every day, SNAP benefits, all that crazy stuff. But how, let's keep it local and let's build a community together where we host food drives or get people together and understand that we do need each other, contrary to what we may be tweeting or putting on Facebook.
Yeah. Trump is he's just annoying. There's like annoying, then there's like sickening. And he's just like, just a combo of like both. I just feel like, I don't condone violence, but I do have the thoughts like, we just need to like, just jump him at this point. Like, like just jump out the bushes. Like, we've all seen his ankles. We know he can't go far. Like, we could just take
him. I don't want to catch no charges for that, man.
True. Listen, just terrible.
I will say something offline later. But and then you have, you know, J.D. Vance, who's praying for his wife's salvation.
I bet.
But they've been plotting and planning since the late 70s and 80s for this moment. It started with the Reagan administration because Ronald Reagan had created in Americans' mind the number one SNAP beneficiary is a black woman with 12 kids, when it's really a white family with 12 kids.
That part, yes.
And so people don't want to recognize that everybody is getting affected by this, and it's not one person over another. And people, I should not be drinking Diet Coke. Don't tell Emily that. But people want to work. And that's the thing. People want to have a good quality life for their families, but a lot of people don't have the abilities to get to work or have a job or have the qualifications for a good paying job. A lot of people are working that are on government assistance. You know, I read a quote that like changed my perspective on homelessness. 40 to 60% of people that are unhoused in America have a job. They just cannot afford a roof over their head.
And isn't that awful that our wages are that bad in America? Like that you can work full time and still need SNAP benefits, still not have a house. That should not be the case,
right?
But it is. I mean, it's the world or the country we live in.
It's just, and then just wild.
So let's talk about segue into what's about school choice. So we're gonna in closing talk about just the education part of just South Carolina. And I also wanted to add that before I hop into this one. I could have sworn that South Carolina, like, they have stopped food stamps altogether. I know that there was stuff going on with, like, Trump having conversations about only, you know, giving out half. But I feel like for the state of South Carolina, like, there was some type of issue specifically for us where they, like, just stopped the program altogether. So people are unsure if they are even going to get the month of November. I'm like, dang. I mean, hopefully because the month just started. Mm. But as of right now, I'm like, I did look up because I was curious what's going on with South Carolina. And that's what it was saying. I was like, my gosh, South Carolina.
Do you know that the max benefit you can get on SNAP benefits, it's like 180 for groceries?
I saw it was like 186.
For what length of time?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's nothing. And that's like, what
is that per week or per month?
Per month, I believe.
I'm not sure.
That is insane. Like
insanely
exactly.
low.
Like,
because how could you afford? And this is why they are eating junk food, because that's more affordable than actually healthy food.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes into healthcare costs.
Exactly. I'm glad it's you brought that up.
It is.
Well, yeah, the school choice, that's segregation 2.0.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what school choice. So school choice, for anybody that does not know what school choice is, so let's start from there. So basically, school choice allows the option for parents to decide what schools their children should attend that's outside their district. Say that there is a special, top-notch, whatever school 30 minutes away. School choice allows that parent to be able to send their child from point A to point B. And so that is one of the topics of conversations within the state of South Carolina. Should this be a thing? There, it comes with different pros and cons. Some of the pros is like it will, you know, help with competition, promote other schools to want to, you know, do better, be better, things like that. And then there is like, you know, on the flip side of the coin, it's also, like he said, it creating a divide and a separation between, you know, what someone is with schools that students are able to attend versus schools that maybe some other kids aren't able to attend. But for South Carolina, this is a big deal because this is even like a current thing that we're even having a conversation about. And it's becoming like bipartisan, like in discussion, because it's like, yeah, I get that you are wanting to, like, send your child to, you know, the best education, the best location, you know, all these different things that schools should provide. And it's like, well, why do you have to send your child 30 minutes away to be able to get that? Like, why can't you send them, like, just up the street, you know, at that public school? Like, why are you sending them so far away? What, you know, made that school so great that you want to go that far away versus a public setting where it's like, where everyone should have those same type of accolades and access and, you know, rewards and education and resources and all that stuff. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's just so, like, go ahead.
I have a question about this, and this might sound really dumb, but I don't have kids and don't plan to, so I don't know a lot about this. But so if parents can pick where their kids are going to school, I mean, wouldn't every parent pick that really great school and it would be overrun? Like, how does that work?
And that's part of the problem why some people are not able to, like, pick these schools, even if the option was available. Because one, if you're in a rural area, how is that child going to get the transportation and means to that school that's like 30 minutes away? You're in a rural area, stuff like that. And then not only that, it's like information. How do the people in these areas even know that that's even an option? Are you spreading it? Are you knocking on their door? Hey, did you know that there's a school choice option? You know, like, did you know you could sign it? Like, how are you getting, how is the information funneling to people in this community? So again, and it's like also the cost of the tuition alone. It's like them being able to even finally get to the school. Now you got to pay to support, to, you know, to be in that program. So it's like, it's just pros and cons again. And it's like, and as
So are they sending them to a private school? Why are they?
Some of them are, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the school choice programs, they will take public funds to go to private schools.
Yeah.
Which, stuff like that. I thought was against the state constitution that you can't take public funds for private institutions. But a lot of states, that was South Carolina's state constitution, but there's a lot of states that are doing school choice. And a lot of this, there's no oversight. That's what concerns me is like we're in public schools. You have a school board. You can elect a school board member. You can run for school board if you don't like what the curriculum, which the school board does not have a say in curriculum. Actually, I take that back. But it's these private schools or some of these like charter schools that are popping up too that are private are not, they can deny someone. They can say, no, we don't want student based on this reason, based on that reason. Where public schools, they have to make accommodations for students by state and federal law. So I think for me, I think it's something that Democrats need to work a better messaging on, because let's be real, there are some schools that are good, some schools that are bad that are in the public school system. And how do we reform our education system that it benefits everybody, that can teach them ways to teach kids? I have three kids in the public school systems, and someone came up to me the other day. They're like, what are your kids learning? And I'm like, math, basic arithmetic, social studies. One is in a robotics class learning how to code. So how are, like, what are we teaching the kids in order to get into this 21st century as well? And I think that school choice, a lot of parents that are a part of it, I just, you know, there is a genuine concern that parents want to get their kids the best education. But when it comes to school choice, why is my tax dollars in South Carolina, our property taxes is not going to school district, the homeowner's tax, but why are we sending money that is paid as a tax to a private school that has no oversight, that has no accountability of what's being taught? The student, so my public, this money is, public money is going to a private school that may teach creationism for all we know. So, you know, why are we allowing that instead of funding our schools fully at the best that they need to be? And why are teachers still being paid less than, you know, $50,000 a year? Is that by design? Is that on purpose? And, you know, it goes up to the kind of what I feel like is they want to control how people are taught and educated.
And it also takes the funding away from like public schools as well. And I feel like the public schools is the ones that need it. And you gotta tailor each individual public school to the needs of that district. So I feel like that they're the ones who need that. And it would bring attention to how they're making those changes. They're listening to what needs to be done. Like if you got people willing to send their kids by any means 30 minutes away to this, you know, school, well, it's like, how about you take those same resources, whatever that's, you know, making them make that decision and update the school, especially where I'm at in Charleston. Some of these buildings is like, you can see it's a updated version, but then you look across the street and it looks like a fire hazard. And it's like, my gosh, like people are still living in these like conditions and they're still sending their children to, you know, these schools and then wondering why, like, South Carolina, I read that South Carolina is like number 43 or 44 out of like 50 on education, like out of all the 50 states, we're still at the bottom of the
toilet. It's moved up.
Oh, okay. See,
it was 48. It was 48 at one point.
So like, we're like,
moving up
like,
a little bit.
It was like 44, 45 out of 50. And it's like, my gosh. Oh my goodness. It's like we have.
And the part that I always say about the public school system in South Carolina is the fact that literally in our laws, it says that the government has, for the state laws, that South Carolina has to provide a minimally adequate education. And I'm like, that is horrendous. Like, it should be more than, like, you know, I grew up in Michigan and we had wonderful public schools. Well, let me take that back a little bit. So, not in Detroit. But again, there's that segregation thing. We had wonderful public schools in the white suburb I lived in. But the next city over, Detroit, had horrible. So let me not blanket that Michigan has great public schools, because there's definitely districts where there's issues. But that minimally adequate part is just always like, every time I think about the public school system here, those are the words that stand out to me. Because I'm like, whoever thought minimally adequate and anything with children was okay is a monster. No, our kids deserve so much better than minimally adequate. They deserve better than adequate. You know, it's just like, they're defenseless, innocent children. Goodness.
Yeah. And that's the design of our, that's the design of kind of going back to the history of the state of South Carolina. And, but, you know, I think of now with my kids in public school, and we have in York County, Fort Mill School District that everyone wants to live in York County, or they come to Rock Hill and they want to be in certain school districts. And we have basically on paper, the ratings and everything, we're pretty equal now at that point of comparing the two school districts, but parents still want that choice to send them to private school with school choice. But I feel like it's like, what are you trying to get away from? Because Rock Hill is a more racially diverse city than compared to Fort Mill. Fort Mill is predominantly white. And a lot of students, like the number one school, ironically, in Rock Hill is on the south side of Rock Hill, which is 98% Black. And it's predominantly, they're starting to bus kids from other school districts, other zones into that school. But I feel, but it's important to realize, like, what is at the heart of the issue for the school? Why are we giving the parents the choice? What are, do they feel like they're being indoctrinated from in the school districts? Because my kids come home and I'm like, what did you learn today? And it's just ABC, like multiplication. And I talk to teachers, and what they want is funding. And what they want is better pay, and they want students that are present. They want students that are fed, because students tend to act up more when they're starving, when they're hungry. And you're taking resources from public schools and sending them to a private school that, who knows who's over it, what kind of program is being in there. And now they're sending PragerU into the school systems, thanks to our state superintendent. And so it's important for people to realize your money, school districts have a lot of money. Right now, there's a lot of the business taxes go to the school districts more than our property taxes here and in South Carolina. And so when a business comes into a county, like my friend who's on school board told me about a company that wants to come into Rock Hill, and they want to take $18.6 million off of paying to the school district over 20 years. And so I told her, I was like, well, just get them to pay for a dual enrollment program at, you know, Winthrop University or one of the technical schools to teach skills, because I feel like that's what's missing in our schools. But it keeps going back to the old adage that I feel everything comes down to the integration of race, I feel like, and people still just don't want to let that go. And that's why we have good schools and bad schools. It's just the inadequate funding of schools, public education in general.
Yeah, that's a good way to bring it up. So again, if you are listening, that's basically what school choice is about. So it's either, and I feel like just educate yourself more about that, because again, this is going to affect everybody. That's the good thing about a school board, is the fact that anybody on it, they are supposed to be working for, well, all roles are supposed to work for everybody, but at least school board is nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. So it's like, don't worry about what my political preference is. You need help with your child. Okay, I'm the one to help you.
Yeah.
Because period, that's it.
Let's see, your mom's for liberty, because, you know, they're crazy.
Right. But that's like a whole nother, like, politically speaking episode topic right there. But with that being said, thank you guys. Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Politically Speaking. Thank you to our special guest, Ryan, for hopping on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, for just kicking it with us. Thank you so much. Until and then, so if you're tuning in again on next episode, we are gonna have Emily back with us. I'm so excited. I know.
Yay!
That's exciting.
We missed her. Oh. Emily, if you're listening, I hope you enjoyed your little mini break. You're coming back. We can't wait for you to be back. But thank you again for hopping on. Until next time, keep it politically speaking. See you guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
This is Kirsten Pruitt. Please subscribe to the show wherever you find podcasts and consider leaving us a rating. You can find links to our social media and YouTube page in the show notes. Thanks again for listening.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.